Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Elliot Callan. I'm CEO of Prosperity Financial Group, and I'd like to welcome you to another exciting episode of Meet the Expert with Elliot Callan. Today, we are doing something very much out of the box, very much different. We have someone on from Boston, Kathy Saunders, who is a living legend in the investment community. And I don't mean in my side of it, where I'm dealing directly with the consumer. I'm talking about from the high-end corporate side of it. And Kathy, I'd like to welcome you to our show.
Elliot, thank you so much. It's great to be reunited with you. Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Very quickly, Kathy has 37 years in this industry. She is the head of corporate sustainability and public policy. I'm not quite sure what that is, corporate sustainability. I'm assuming they like to sustain themselves so they can be in business a month from now, but I'm sure it's something different than that. And she is also one of the top female executives in the United States in the investment industry. That's pretty exciting. If you want to reach us, we're at 925-314-8503, www.prosperityfinancialgroup.com, or Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T, at prosperityfinancialgroup.com. Kathy, I got some questions for you. And Kathy's an expert on leadership. That's going to be our theme this morning: corporate leadership, individual leadership, family leadership. We're going to try to get our arms around what that means to you as an audience listening. We know that the people that listen to the show are people that are investing with us, thinking about investing with an advisor, have curiosity about investing. They're trying to make money. They're trying to feed their family. They're trying to get ahead. They're trying to create a successful retirement, whatever that may be to them. And that's what we do as a living, is help people create successful retirements. So let's start with defining what leadership is to you, Kathy. And why is that important? And why is that an important subject to you?
That is a perfect question to ask to set up this whole conversation, Elliot. And one of the things that we have had the gift of receiving is an opportunity to see in action just so many leaders in our industry. But maybe I can go slightly off road in answering your question and just mention this. You've known me for a long time, and you've seen me do that commute between Boston and San Francisco many, many times. And I'll never forget on one trip that I was making between the two cities, I was deeply ensconced in reading the Sunday New York Times, and there was an article that caught my attention about a 13-year-old girl by the name of Natalie Gilbert, who was given the distinct honor of singing the national anthem at an NBA playoff game. So as you can imagine, this was a huge night for Natalie and her family. She was at the Rose Garden in Portland, Oregon. It was a game between the Dallas Mavericks and the Portland Trail Blazers. And it was right before Natalie was supposed to go out and start singing the national anthem. And one of the people standing next to her said, "When the lights start going down, make your way out to center court." So a lot was going on. The Rose Garden was at capacity, something like 26,000 fans, something along those lines. Hundreds of thousands of people watching on TV. And there it was. The lights started coming down little by little. When finally there was just one spotlight completely focused on her. As soon as the lights came down, the spotlight was there. She raised the microphone that she was clenching in her right hand to the bottom of her chin. She opened her mouth, and nothing, the words to the national anthem, were stuck in her throat. 1 second went by, 2 seconds went by, maybe 3 seconds went by, and a guy by the name of Maurice Cheeks, who was at that time coach of the Portland Trail Blazers, levitated off the bench, ran out to center court, wrapped his left arm around Natalie Gilbert, raised his right hand to the rafters, and that night led 26,000 people, hundreds of thousands watching on TV, to sing the national anthem with Natalie in his arms. And you're probably saying, what does that have to do with leadership? Leaders lead when everybody's watching, and leaders lead when no one is watching. And that, to me, in those 3 seconds that maybe this girl was in need the most, this is somebody who exemplified and was the highest expression of both character and leadership. And those are two things that you can consistently find in all of the leaders that we've had the distinct honor and pleasure of meeting over our entire careers.
So in your world, and you've been doing this now for 37 years, it's a really nice, wonderful story. What does that mean to you, and what does that mean to our listener here?
Well, I think it's interesting because if you take that story and you apply it to the business that we're in, I think that, first of all, we're at a time, whether you look at our geopolitical situation, whether you look at the investment industry, we are in a time where leadership could not be more important than it is today. And the times when you need leadership the most in our business is when markets get choppy, when markets get uncertain, when there's uncertainty out there, and people need to make sure that they're sticking to their plans. And that's why it's most important in our business. And those are the times where you have to have leadership navigating your financial future at every single turn. So those are the biggest applications as it relates to what we do every single day.
Well, you brought up a great topic. We call that behavioral finance, and it's managing emotions. It's helping our investors, our clients stay on track. It's helping people stay on track with their life plans. And so that's so important in leadership here. But I know from your point of view, you've been on, and you're in the corporate world. You're in Boston. I love Boston. It's my favorite small city in America. I'm shocked because Boston and San Francisco are the same size and they couldn't be more different. Yeah. And how they look and how they act and everything about them. And I was just there in Boston with you. What's been your journey?
When I started working at Putnam, I was answering the phones 37 years ago, right across the street from where I am right now. So I guess in some ways I haven't gone too far. You're giving me way too much credit than I deserve. But I was lucky enough to learn from a number of leaders at Putnam back in 1987, which I started that literally just a few months before the October crash in 1987. So I guess so. It was jumping into the pool at a time where leadership was also extremely important. I started out answering the phones. I worked my way up through distribution at Putnam for 3 years before I was asked to move out to San Francisco and eventually meet you, Elliot, as a matter of fact. I spent 18 years out in the great city by the bay, doing a number of different things, leading our financial institutions division. I was out representing our firm as a wholesaler for many years. And then I had an opportunity to come back and run our institutional business with the firm. That was back in 2007. That's what brought me back from San Francisco to Boston again. I ran our client engagement center for several years, our registered investment advisory practice. And then our CEO asked if I'd be interested in doing something a little bit different at the firm. And that's what got me into the public policy space and then eventually corporate sustainability. So I guess you could say I've been on a 37-year rotational program, always stepping into roles that I never thought I was qualified to do. But as I went into each one of those ventures, I just attached myself to great leaders and people who were expert at what they did, and they've led me in the right direction and kept my ears open and made sure that I was soliciting and taking in new ideas every step of the way. So it's been a lot of fun, that's for sure.
You know, it's funny, Kathy, all of us talk about in leadership, and I think of myself in leadership too, as CEO of three organizations here today and started and sold a few companies along the way. And one of them is a great charity. And matter of fact, that book over my left shoulder called Driven is my latest book, which is on the Amazon best-selling list right now, about leadership and entrepreneurship. And if you haven't gotten it and you want it, give me a holler or go online to Amazon. It's not an expensive book and it's a pretty fast read. You could do it in one afternoon. But it is about the trials and tribulations of leadership and sometimes the failures of leadership too, because they have those too. And all of us have been motivated and touched by leaders. One of my heroes is Winston Churchill. We talked about that offline from a book. I was amazed when I was young. AT&T, which I don't even think exists today, was buying everybody out literally in New Jersey. And they owned Continental Baking, which was Hostess, and ultimately Drake's, and all these companies. They just owned everybody. Biggest defense contractor, major companies. They made fun of them on a Godfather movie. You know, AT&T giving a gold telephone to the head of Batista in Cuba. And even Mel Brooks made fun of them in a movie. He called them Engulf and Devour because they were taking everybody over. But I was amazed as a young person that they were so driven by their vision to become the world player in so many businesses. And eventually, I think it ate them up or they just changed leadership hands. You've been motivated by someone you told me named Howard Gardner. Who was that and why is that important?
Well, first of all, Elliot, before you even go there, I got my copy of Driven, as a matter of fact, delivered to my doorstep by Amazon. And it's coincidental that you brought up ITT as an example, because my dad used to work there. He worked there for 9.5 years. I think they also own Sheraton Hotels, if I'm not mistaken. At any rate, we're on the same wavelength as far as books are concerned. I also just got a Winston Churchill book from the library just the other day. Howard Gardner, it's funny that you bring him up because he is a Harvard professor. And where I'm sitting right now, it's probably no more than 2.5 miles from the other side of the Charles River where Gardner teaches at Harvard. But at any rate, I went to a women's leadership course at Kellogg, at Northwestern University, the Kellogg School. And it was the first time that I got exposed to some of the works of Howard Gardner. Accomplished guy. He's written about 20 different books. Probably has the same number of honorary degrees. And he grew up with a passion for history and politics. But the thing that attracted me the most to a lot of what he did was exactly what you said, his research on leadership. So he studied a number of different leaders from a variety of different generations, a lot of different disciplines, leaders from all over the world. And you would recognize every single name of the leaders that he studied in his research. People like Eleanor Roosevelt, people like George Marshall, who was the chief of staff of the U.S. Army in World War II, Albert Einstein, Martin Luther King, who arguably changed the world with one speech, 11 minutes in length from the Capitol steps, Margaret Thatcher, Martha Graham, the choreographer, Margaret Mead, the anthropologist. So a variety of different leaders. And what he wanted to do initially is extract as much learning as he possibly could and understand the stories of these leaders. So the more that he got into it, there was this question that kept on coming back to him again and again and again. And the question was this: is there a chance that there are things or traits that all of these leaders had in common? And the answer to that question is there was. So that's what attracted me to Howard Gardner. That was what he studied. And I'd be happy to share some of the things that he extracted from all these leaders, if you would like me to go there.
I would love that. Let me remind everybody that we're talking with Kathy Saunders with Putnam. Now, Franklin, as they recently were purchased by
Franklin. Soon to be Franklin. You're absolutely right.
Soon to be. She's 37 years in the investment industry at the highest possible end of the corporate level, a little bit different than what I do, which is day to day in the mud, getting your sometimes your nose bloody building portfolios. And she's head of corporate sustainability and public policy and one of the top female executives in the United States in the investment world. And the reason I find Kathy fascinating is because she doesn't come here or on any show with an agenda. She doesn't say, buy my product. We've got the best. We've got the best large company value manager in the industry, or ETF or mutual fund or stocks. And we look at them and we discuss them and we put them in a sieve and we shake them out and we come up with the best. That's not Kathy's agenda here. Even though Putnam is a fine company, they have some wonderful products. Really, she's much more involved in the leadership role at the highest possible end. And we were just talking about Howard Gardner, one of her mentors, who wrote about some time ago about the great thought leaders of that time. And he goes back three generations, so seven decades maybe, into people. And as you studied Howard Gardner, and people can find his books and they can look it up, Gardner, and they want to know about leadership, you know there are lessons that he teaches. And I know you're an expert at his lessons. I think there are four or five, six lessons that you probably can extract. Why don't you share with us what you think those lessons are?
You're absolutely right. And he's written a number of books, as we spoke about. But if you look through all of the books, there are five things that kept on coming up, these common themes from these leaders who he studied. First off, every single leader took time to reflect. They reflected every single day, not once in a while, not just when it was convenient, but they actually allocated deliberate and intentional time to reflection. And basically, it was in that time that they said to themselves, okay, what worked, what didn't? And for some leaders, it was a period of reflection by going for a run, meditation, prayer, could be just spending an extra few minutes in the shower. It didn't matter, but it was a way for each one of these leaders to turn up the volume and turn off the noise in their life and take in what was really working with them. So put another way, it was a way to slow their life down so they could eventually iterate and speed things up. So the first thing, which is so hard to do, was they took time to reflect. The second thing, and keep in mind, if you take a look at all five of these lessons, these are things that you can apply to your own life as a leader in your house, as a leader in your community doing philanthropic work, or a leader in your financial life as well. So number one, taking time to reflect. Number two, every single one of these leaders leveraged their strength. They knew exactly what they were good at, and they knew exactly what they weren't good at, or those things that didn't come naturally to them. What they did is they sort of declared a major, and they spent as much time as they possibly could in that area where they were strongest. And if you really think about it, it was almost as if that they were deliberate and intentional around making sure that they spent as much time during the day in the area where they were authentically aligned, because it's there that they could make the biggest contribution. So they figured out what their passion was, they figured out what their purpose was, and they spent their time in the area where they were most authentically aligned. That was number two. Number three, every single one of them learned from experience. They remember their first job, no matter how big or small it was. We talked about the career path that I've had here at Putnam, answering the phone. Some of my biggest and best learning of my entire career was from those phone calls and the learning that I got from it. So they remembered their first job, but they remembered what they learned from that first job along the way. The fourth thing that every single one of these leaders had in terms of traits, they were all great storytellers. And it's funny, Elliot, we've always matched each other's reading list, if you will, because we like stories. We like to get into the psyche and learn from the people around us. Every single one of them had a great way of taking a look at what they were most passionate about and wrapping it in a story so that they could make the unfamiliar familiar for those people who they were trying to influence or get to be advocates for their work. So the fourth thing is they were all great storytellers. And the last one, and this is such a great example of it, Elliot, every single leader knew that they couldn't do it alone. They had a team around them. They built relationships because they all knew that there were going to be those periods in life where they lost their energy, lost their moxie, lost their mojo, or just their self-confidence for that small period of time for many of them. And they knew that they needed to have a team around them to remind them along the way that they weren't crazy and they needed to keep going and that they could do it and to help them be resilient in their work along the way.
Those are really great lessons. Let me ask you about a word that I think you left out there. And I'm not sure I'm putting too much emphasis on this word, and it's character. I want to mention character, and I want to take out the word perfection from that word character, because if someone is looking for perfection, that's not our species. We're not perfect. We do a lot of things wrong every day. There's rarely a week that goes by when I'm not apologizing to somebody in my office for something I said, offhanded comment, or should have thought more about it, or I wish I didn't say that. It wasn't meant to hurt, but it hurt a little bit. You know, I live in California where everybody's sensitive. If you just tell them the sun is shining and it's raining, there are people that are hurt. But really, from a human being standpoint, we're far from perfect, but character counts. And I'm a big fan of character counts, not perfection. I mean, you're working for a large company. You're talking about corporate sustainability and public policy. The world of public policy and the world of the word of character, sometimes I feel they can't even be said in the same sentence anymore. But is the reality of the world we live in, because our leaders are, with 24-hour news, are basically naked. Mm-hmm. And we're not meant to be naked as right. A species. And I'm not talking about clothing here. So when you talk about Gardner and you talk about leaders and some of these great people, Eleanor Roosevelt or Winston Churchill or Martin Luther King, and they were very imperfect people doing exceptional work, even if you did totally disagree politically with what they did, how they did it, and why they did it, you can't deny that they did it. And that there is a difference between that two. What do you think of that? And did he miss out on that word? And how much for the people listening here, does character really matter in a very imperfect society?
Well, it is extremely important. And I think the place where character comes out, going back to our initial story, is when things don't go our way and how we show up in the world. And I think one of the gifts of the work that we do together is, as we're charting our course with our clients and at their side, there are periods where the news is great. There are periods when the news is more than great, but there are periods when markets move in the opposite direction. And what that requires is sometimes we need to deliver bad news. And I think that it's at those times where our character is really measured. And I think more often than not, what people want to hear the truth. And that's what character is all about, is delivering that consistently and deliberately and intentionally over time. But it's a key component of leadership without question.
Well, this has been great. We're talking about leadership. Let me ask you that question. I know you've got some other comments on that, but there are people that are listening who are living their daily lives. They're going to their job, maybe they're running a company. They're trying to do the right thing. They're trying to help their employees. They're trying to be a good spouse, a partner. They're trying to do the right thing for the most part, or maybe they're just trying to get through their day with that incident, whatever it might be. And then they're coming home and they've got young kids or medium kids or kids like me where I've lost a child along the way. And you know, you got to come home and feel that it's hard to get by a day of a little bit of emptiness on there, but they're trying to get through the day of it. From a leadership standpoint, why should they care about the whole concept of leadership when we're just trying to get through our day?
Well, I think I'll go back to the fifth point that Gardner identified, which I think is so fitting for your question. Every leader knew that they couldn't do it alone. And there is no better time to build that support system around you than now. You can't make a friend when you need a friend, right? And the more that we can prepare for those times that you're just describing, the better off we're going to be. We need that ecosystem around us. We need that support around us. And it might not seem like, and your point about just getting through the day, hey, I don't want to lead today. You can almost say that. I don't want to lead today. I just need to get through. Well, make no mistake, every leader is constantly building that support system around them because they know they're going to get to that day that you just described, and you're going to need that community around you in order to get through it and push forward to be the leader that you want to be on the other side.
It's pretty amazing. It's a great esoteric concept, leadership and being a good leader, being a thoughtful leader. And whether we know it or not, if you're running a business and you're listening to this, you're a leader. And that's why I wrote that book for people like you. And that's what Kathy talks about. If you're doing something greater and you're doing something in the communities and you're running a charity or putting together a charity or you're running for office or you're in office, you're a leader of some kind. And everything you do affects somebody around you and it touches. Where I'm amazed how all of us touch other people. You know, that movie, The Wonderful, Wonderful Life, George touched other people. It's true. All of us touch other people every single day of the week, both positively and negatively. And I think of my job in as a financial advisor and a CEO here as to motivate individuals to feel good about what we're doing and to know that we've got their back and we've got them on the right track. And I know from your point of view, you're looking at even in a much grander scale that, hey, wake up today and trust your leaders or become a leader.
Yes, exactly. Put it into action.
Action is the best word. Inaction is not a good step. That's always my one of my phrases. Inaction is not a good plan for you. Oh. We've been talking with Kathy Saunders here. She's from Putnam Invest, and they're a Boston-based company. They're a partner of ours in so many ways, a strategic partner, not a financial partner, but a strategic partner. They've been just wonderful in what we're doing. And Kathy, who's head of corporate sustainability and public policy for Putnam, soon to become Franklin Investments, which is a California company. And hopefully they don't lose their people because they've got some just absolutely terrific people that we love in the field and managing money and people like yourself. They're a house filled with character and integrity. And in a world that is just pounded when somebody does something wrong in our industry and makes the front page of the Wall Street Journal, character and integrity are just so important today. So thank you, Kathy, for being part of this.
My pleasure, Elliot. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you're very welcome. And this has been another episode of Meet the Expert with Elliot Callan. You can see all these episodes and more at www.prosperityfinancialgroup. I'm Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T, at prosperityfinancialgroup.com, 925-314-8503. And I look forward to hearing from you. Have a great day.